This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, sitting in for Terry Gross. Another of the inductees in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year, along with Alice Cooper, is singer-songwriter Tom Waits. Critic Daniel Dirkholz described his voice as sounding, and I quote, "like it was soaked in a vat of bourbon, left hanging in the smokehouse for a few months, and then taken outside and run over with a car." Here is that voice, singing "Misery is the River of the World."
All that the monkey can climb, no more he shows his tail. Call no man happy till he dies, there's no milk at the bottom of the pail. God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel, like the thistles that are growing on the trunk of a tree. All the good in the world you can put inside a thimble and still have room for you and me. If there's one thing you can say about mankind, there's nothing kind about man. You can drive out nature with a pitchfork, but it always comes roaring back again. Misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world. Misery's the river of the world.
Tom Waits is one of the true eccentrics of pop music. The people he sings about are usually outlaws, drunks, hobos, and losers. The darkness of his lyrics is accentuated by the rumble and rasp of his voice, a voice that sounded old even when he was young. Waits has been recording since 1973. His songs have been used on the soundtracks of several films, and he's acted in the movies Down by Law, Shortcuts, Wolfen, Bram Stoker's Dracula, and Coffee and Cigarettes. Terry spoke with Tom Waits in 2002.
Some of your music writing seems influenced by the German songs of Kurt Weill. Have you listened a lot to him? Do you feel like he's influenced your writing?
Well, you know, I hadn't really listened to him until I had people tell me that I sounded somewhat like him or had some influence in there. So I said, well, I better start listening to this stuff. And
what'd you think?
And I liked it. It's really angry. And I guess I like beautiful melodies telling me terrible things.
Small put, yeah.
So it works for me. Yeah.
What was the music that you grew up listening to because your parents were listening to it? I mean, before you were old enough to choose music yourself, what was the music in your house?
Really young mariachi music, I guess. My dad only played a Mexican radio station, and then Frank Sinatra, and later Harry Belafonte, and then I would go over to my friends' houses, and I would go into the den with their dads and find out what they were listening to. That's what I was really. I couldn't wait to be an old man. I was about 13, I didn't really identify with the music of my own generation, but I was very curious about the music of others. And I think I responded to the song forms themselves, cakewalks and waltzes and barcaroles and parlor songs and all that stuff. Which is just really nothing more than jello molds for music. But I seem to like the old stuff, Cole Porter and, Oscars and Hammerstein and Gershwin and all that stuff. I like the melody.
So when you were 13, being more interested in the music of your parents, your friends' parents, and in your friends' music, what was the music of your generation that didn't interest you?
Like the Strawberry Alarm Clock, or
right.
But later I liked that stuff. Like the Animals and Blue Cheer and Led Zeppelin and all that stuff, and the Yardbirds, and of course Rolling Stones and the Beatles and Bob Dylan and James Brown. I was really, really hot on James Brown.
Now, you said your father listened mostly to the Mexican station and to mariachi music.
Yeah.
Was your father Mexican?
No, my dad's from Texas. He grew up in a place called Sulphur Springs, Texas. And my mom's from Oregon. She listened to church music, you know, all that, Brother Springer, all those. She used to send money into all the preachers, you know. And but the early songs I remember was Abilene. When I heard Abilene on the radio, it really moved me. And then I heard, Abilene, prettiest town I've ever seen. Women there don't treat you mean. And Abilene, I just thought that was the greatest lyric. You know, women there don't treat you mean. And then Detroit City. Last night I went to sleep in Detroit City. And I dreamed about the cotton fields back home. I liked songs with the names of towns in them, and mm-hmm. I think I liked songs with weather in them, and something to eat. So I feel like there's a certain anatomical aspect to a song that I respond to. I think, oh, yeah, I can go into that world. There's something to eat. There's the name of a street. There's a saloon. Okay. So I think probably that's why I put things like that in my songs.
I want to play another track from Blood Money. And this is called A Good Man Is Hard to Find. This is Tom
sure.
Waits.
Well, I always play Russian roulette in my head. 17 black, 429 red. How far from the gutter, how far from the pew. I will always remember to forget about you. Good man.
Now, I want to ask you about your voice. You have a very raspy singing voice. Was that a sound that you strove for, you know, that you worked on having, or is it what naturally developed?
It's that old man thing. I couldn't wait to be an old man. Old man with a deep voice. I scream into a pillow.
Well, you know John. You know John Mahoney, the actor.
Sure, yeah.
He told me he actually did stuff like that. Wanted a distinctive voice, and and so he used to do these exercises that he practiced in a closet of just like shouting and trying to, you know, like growl a lot, and he actually permanently did something to his vocal cords as a result of it.
Yeah, hooray! I'm all for it.
was say Louis Armstrong an influence on you?
Oh God, yeah, sure, yeah. You know, you can't ignore the influence of someone like Louis Armstrong. It's he's like a river. He's like a country to be explored in and of himself. And he was like he came out of the ground just like a potato. You know, he's completely natural. Sure, love those tunes and. But this one, this Good Man's Hard to Find was, was an attempt to kind of tip my hat somewhat to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever worried about hurting your voice by...
Oh, I've heard it. Yeah, I have heard it. But I have a voice doctor in New York who used to treat Frank Sinatra and various people. He said, oh, you're doing fine. Don't worry about it.
That's good. Now, you once said that you wish you could have been a part of the Brill Building era in which people like Carole King and Lieber and Stoller and Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry were writing songs for singers and for vocal groups. What do you think you would have liked about that?
Oh, I guess writing at gunpoint sounds really exciting to me. Those kinds of deadlines. I went to a rehearsal building on Times Square in New York one afternoon, and a really tiny little room. In fact, it was probably smaller than the room I'm in right now, which is a little larger than a phone booth. There's just enough room for a little spinet piano, and then you could just barely close the door, and there you were. And it was, and you could hear every kind of music coming to you through the walls and through the windows and underneath the door. And you heard African bands, and you heard, like, you know, comedians, and you'd hear applause every now and then, and you'd hear tap dancers, and I think I just liked the whole melange of it, you know, the way it all kind of mixes together. Mm-hmm. I like turning on two radios at the same time and listening to them. I like hearing things incorrectly. I think that's how I get a lot of ideas, is by mishearing something.
What was your first instrument?
I don't know. I don't know. Probably a box. Something.
But I mean, the first instrument.
Oh, my dad gave me a guitar when I was about nine, and you know, I learned El Paso, and actually, I learned it in Spanish because he wouldn't purchase any you know, like English speaking records. He didn't like them. And in fact, I remember going
this
by.
This was your father, yeah.
It's my dad, yeah. We went by a stop sign once. It was a guy in a hot rod with, you know, with a duck tail and everything, greased down here, comb way back. And he's gunning the motor, and we're in the station wagon, and he looked over at that guy, like, you know. And then he looked over at me, and then, as if to say, don't get any ideas, you know. So I had a guitar, I learned three chords, I thought I knew everything, and it kind of grew from there.
Now, you dropped out of high school. Why did you drop out? Is there something that you want to do instead, or did you just hate going?
Oh, I wanted to go into the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the ceiling in the rooms. I didn't like the holes in the ceiling, the little tiny holes in the corkboard and the long stick used for opening the windows.
Oh, God. Yeah, we had one of those in my elementary school.
I just
yeah.
hated all that stuff. I was real sensitive to my visual surroundings, and I just wanted to get out of there.
Did you ever do the street musician thing?
I didn't, but when I see people do it, I see, oh, man, I should have done that. That's how you really get your chops together, you know. But my first gigs, my first big gigs, are opening the show for Frank Zappa, and I think that was difficult. I was kind of like the rectal thermometer for the audience, and it was a little awkward for me. I was alone, and I was performing in front of large groups of people, and they were verbally abusive, and I think I'm like a dog. I was beat as a dog, so...
Is there a point in your career that you see as a turning point from getting to where you are now from where you were when you started performing?
Oh, yeah, probably. Well, I got married, really. You know? That was it. You know? I mean, that's like the most important thing I ever did. And then Kathleen really was the one that encouraged me to produce my own records, you know. And,
mm-hmm. What kind of music background is she from?
Oh, she's got, like, opera in there, and she was going to be a nun, you know, so we changed all that.
Yeah, I guess so. Tom Waits, thank you so much. It's really been great to talk with you. Thank you.
Oh, we're all done.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice to talk to you, Terry.
Tom Waits, speaking to Terry Gross in 2002. The 26th Annual Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony will be held March 14th.